Merry Christmas and welcome to El Tel and John's La Liga Weekly. So Messi has been making the extraordinary look ordinary again. 50 goals for 2019. That's 9 years from the 10 in this decade that he's hit the half century. I guess we'll never know how he would have gone on at Stoke. The Real Madrid faithful saw their side draw 0-0 with Athletic. That's back-to-back goalless draws in La Liga for Los Blancos for the first time since 2006. Mallorca fans aren't brimming with goodwill to all men, especially not the meddling VAR. Whatever happened to clear and obvious? On Barcelona's penalty against Alaves and on Sevilla's penalty against Mallorca, neither commentator even mentioned the possibility of an offence. That's a significant clue that the referee mistakes weren't clear and obvious. Atleti had an archangel and held Correa, Camis, it almost worked. It's a bleak midwinter for Celta Vigo, who keep finding ways of losing games, and for Espanyol, who look very much like 11 little donkeys. Chimi Avila is a proper Christmas cracker. Who else would have thought to head a goal from his own assist? Terry Gibson is in Barcelona. So how many minutes, Terry, have you put in the course of this match round?
Every game so far again. Yeah, no, all done, dusted again.
Very good.
Straightforward when I'm here. I mean, I watched Friday at home and then I've been here since Saturday, the first game on Saturday, all the way through to the last game. And it passed me by. It was the last game of the decade. So yes. We've got all the usual stuff to do that when you have a decade, which I've been listening to about the Premier League, players that have been memorable and the best 11 and whatever. So it's just a shame it ended. The last game ended on a 0-0 when we had some really good games this weekend.
It has. Let's do the decade. I know we haven't discussed this, but it's been a brilliant decade for Spanish football, hasn't it? If you look at the dominance of Spanish clubs in European competition, how strong Barcelona and Real Madrid have been. Barcelona have obviously been the strongest team domestically. Real Madrid have made up for that with those Champions Leagues. As we get into the end of the decade, we are just beginning to wonder whether the tide might have turned a little bit the Premier League's way. But looking back over the last 10 years, we'll look upon this as the Messi and Ronaldo era, I think, won't we, with Barcelona and Real Madrid?
Definitely. And I think that overlooks other achievements as well. Clearly, it has to go down as the Messi and Ronaldo decade because of the two, clearly by miles, the two best players in the world. And in the same league, then we've got the dominant, as you said, I think 8 out of the last 11 titles have gone to Barcelona. Real Madrid have done better in the Champions League. And then we shouldn't overlook the success of Sevilla in Europe, Atletico Madrid in Europe as well. Atletico Madrid, two Champions League finals and playing against Spanish opposition. So, yeah, no, it's been an outstanding, you know, decade for Spanish teams. The national team didn't do too bad in that decade as well. So it's been a probably the best ever, I would imagine. I can't imagine a better ever decade in terms of the domestic teams in Europe. The national team, I know they won the first one in 2008, then 2010, 2012. So no, it's been a special decade, 10 years or so for all to do with La Liga and the Spain national team.
And just extraordinary. I know I said this last week, but Lionel Messi has been playing at this level for more than a decade now, because he was this good over 10 years ago. But yet another goal where he just makes it look ordinary. Now, it was a relatively straightforward win, wasn't it, for Barcelona against Alaves in the Saturday game, because Alaves looked like they were going to make it hard for them, but actually didn't really put in a tackle when it mattered, gave the ball away too much when it mattered. But Barcelona were looking strong. While we discuss Barcelona, Real Madrid, we should probably reflect on the Clásico, because we haven't had a chance to talk about that. So after a Clásico that wasn't a classic, is that fair to say, Barcelona were back in business?
Yeah, referring to the Clásico, I thought it was a massive disappointment. I think we can be technical and try to be posh about football and look at the technical analysis of it. But when we watch a Clásico, we want to see the best players in the world turn up and you know, some of them stand out and do something that the majority of other players can't do. And in that game, none of them did that. None of them turned up. We're looking at the best players being the hardest working players. And someone like Casemiro is probably possibly the outstanding player. Goalkeepers didn't have enough saves to make. It quite often happens, actually, unless there's a thumping win for one team, the first Clásico doesn't match the second. And I think that's obvious why the second is always nearer towards the end of the season. Hopefully this season it's going to be massively important in terms of who wins the league. But no one does more than us to promote the merits of La Liga and how good a league it is. But truth be told, the first Clásico this season was, I thought, a real letdown.
Michael Cox, who's a very thoughtful writer, wrote the Mix and he writes for The Athletic now, he's quite critical of the Clásico, which I think is, you know, fair enough when you've watched that game. Mm. His conclusion was that these are not the best teams in Europe anymore, Barcelona and Real Madrid. I don't know. I think that's jumping to a conclusion. We'll see. I think, won't we, in the spring in the Champions League?
Yeah, I think that you can't make that conclusion when they're playing each other. It's hard because they could be the two best teams in Europe, cancel each other out in a game. I don't think they are. I don't think they're a million miles away from it. And I've always said, for however long we've been doing this podcast, all of this is just warming up for late February, March, April, May. So, you know, we've got a transfer window to come in between. They've got players missing through injury, particularly Real Madrid. Hazard, I was looking at the goals for Real Madrid today, and Benzema stands out a mile. Hazard's got one goal. Gareth Bale's got two in La Liga. So I think we expect better from them. I know Hazard's currently injured, but one goal by Christmas isn't what we expected when he signed for Real Madrid. So so much can change between now and when the it gets really, you know, important, as I said, in those months, late February, March, Champions League. Have they got the squads, not only in this league, but other leagues, to cope with the demands? No, I think it's too early to make that judgment. But when they're playing each other, especially, it makes it hard. You can't make any comparison to, are they better than, I don't know, Bayern Munich or Juventus if Barcelona and Real Madrid are playing each other.
So what about when Real Madrid play Athletic this evening, as you know, the game that you've just been watching now? They started well, so ran out of ideas a bit towards the end, didn't they, Real Madrid?
Yep, they kind of panicked, and I understand that. And then when you put Jovic on and you put Ramos up front, then you lose patience. It's the only benefit you're going to get from having three centre-forwards in the box is if you get into good crossing positions, and they didn't. But it stands to reason, though, if you've got one of your centre-halves up front, two strikers there as well, you need players to give width and get crosses into the box. By that time, you could almost see it just slipping away in terms of Real Madrid finding the breakthrough, finding a goal and getting all 3 points. And actually, it was a strange game to analyse because I thought Athletic were really poor. You know, I think Bocici played well. I think the three central defenders in the second half with their last ditch, it wasn't structured, it wasn't organised. They put in some good challenges and good blocks, and the goalkeeper had a blinder. But when I looked at the midfield players, they didn't particularly contribute. I thought Iñaki Williams was really poor. Raúl García was really unusually quiet. They didn't have any possession. They couldn't hold the ball up front. Somehow, you analyse that and you think, how did they get a draw? It purely was down to unluck for Real Madrid, hitting the frame of the goal on a few occasions and, you know, just last-ditch defending. To analyse it and say, right, they played five at the back, for the first time this season, that's why they got the point. No, it's not. It's sometimes football's like that. You be lucky, you're unlucky. Things don't go your way and somehow you come away from it. An heroic performance in the end, in terms of the result. I think it's their, in the last 14 years, one draw. And they'll get this draw, they'll look back on this result and everyone will believe they played well. But actually, if they had played well, if Iñaki Williams had played well, with some really half-decent attacking chances they had, then they could have got more than just a point. So I think they were lucky to get the point. For Real Madrid, then team selection comes into question. Playing Rodrigo and Vinicius together in what we always knew was going to be a tough game in terms of breaking down a really organised defence, a team that don't score many goals. So it's also a bit of a mystery as to why Gareth Bale I don't see any pattern with his playing time at the moment. Missing a couple of games, then we all assumed he'd play in the Clásico, but there was no reason to suggest why he should. And then having played in the Clásico, then he misses tonight's game. So it's quite bizarre. So it's a big slip up from Real Madrid. Gives Barcelona a 2-point advantage going into the break. So I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see Zidane pick Rodrigo and Vinicius together again, particularly against a tough opponent in Athletic Bilbao.
We've obviously had the European draw since we last spoke as well, Terry. So Manchester City, isn't it, for Real Madrid? Juicy tight, that one, isn't it? I mean, it's always hard to say, isn't it? Because there's form to come and go before the games start in February. But it's a very hard game to call.
And new players. I think I wouldn't be surprised to see both teams. I mean, I think Manchester City, I don't know what the situation with Laporte, whether he's going to be back. They clearly need a central defender as cover to, at the very least. Fernandinho is playing them at the moment, which is an ideal. So there could be a new centre-back at Man City. Will they buy a stopgap or will they go and buy one of the world's best and surprise everyone and spend a fortune? Likewise, Real Madrid, I think there will be some coming-ins and goings. Some players haven't had playing time at all under Zidane. I expect them to be moved on. Will they then bring another player or two in? But on the face of it, the two draws we're going to talk about, Real Madrid with Man City, is going to be a great two legs to watch.
How busy a transfer window do you expect it to be for the big Spanish clubs?
In general, isn't it? I think there's talk of Atletico. No. The biggest talk is about Atletico getting a centre forward. I'm not sure they need one. I mean, at the moment, they could do with another one. Because Costa's injured. When Costa comes back, do they then want four? Or will it, if they get another... I mean, there's some of the names are experienced strikers who are going to expect to come in and play. Cavani is one. Giroud, I've seen, the kind of fit the bill was cover for Morata or to play alongside Morata and maybe allow João Felix to play a different role. I don't expect loads of stuff from Real Madrid. I don't expect loads of stuff from Barcelona. I think in Barcelona's case, I don't expect anything, if I'm being honest. I think they've got a number of players. We saw a new midfield trio yesterday after the Clásico. In an ideal world, could they... Their long-term, I think, looking at maybe a centre-forward replacement for Luis Suarez. But I don't see that being an issue this season because if anything was to happen to him, you could play Messi there, and of course you could play Griezmann there. So I don't see much happening at all at Barcelona.
So Atleti won at Betis. Always a good result, isn't it, winning at Betis? Even though, as I say, Betis are the team where I could never tell you where they are in La Liga if you stop me at any moment. But they won. Morata scored a lovely goal. So, you know, put a little bit of pressure off the idea of having to replace him. And Correa came off the bench. Correa, I think the stats tell you that Correa is La Liga's best super sub. And he changed the game.
Yeah, I've joked in the past, this is his best position. Honestly, it is. He is the type of player that changes things when he comes on. But he's the type of player that doesn't particularly have an impact, more often than not, when he starts a game. And, you know, he could have a fantastic career. He could drop down a level and play regular or play at Atletico Madrid and play on a regular basis and do exactly what he's doing. I was compromised again by Atletico because they were totally outplayed in the first half. Betis ripped them apart, and I don't know how Betis weren't leading at half-time. They were slightly better in the second half, Atletico. I just think, this is my opinion, I think they're too good to play a game of percentages and wait for an opponent to make a mistake. And they don't, Atletico, rely on not making mistakes. So the in terms of possession in the first half, attempt on goals, they were a million miles away from each other. Betis totally dominated it. But Betis make a mistake for the first goal. Atletico don't make mistakes. So it's are they too good to play that type of game? It's a fantastic win on the face of it. It really is. And it was good to see Morata amongst the goals again. It's just, I've wondered with the where they've been going in recent seasons in terms of the money spent. I know they lose players as well. But are they too good to play a game of percentages, rely on not making errors or minimal errors and banking on Alex Moreno getting corner possession, Correa coming on as a sub, getting the opening goal of the game, and then they're really tough to beat then once they get their noses in front. And that's how I felt they played at Betis. They weren't interested in the ball. They were interested in making sure that they applied enough pressure for Betis to make a mistake and they capitalise.
Yeah, it's usually in the interest of the stronger team to have the more open game, isn't it? Because as you said, when you're talking about the Athletic getting away with a draw, luck is a part in football. People don't like that you say that luck is a part in football, but it is, because it's hard to get the ball in the net, isn't it? It's, you know, it's a thing that lots of things have to go right before you get the ball in the net. So you can't just overwhelm a team. You have to apply the finishing touch, the coup de grace at the end. And obviously, if you're playing a tight game, you're opening yourself up to more luck. And that's what Atleti do. They don't overwhelm teams and they don't create bags and bags of chances. So that brings you on to the Liverpool game, which makes Atleti very different to all the other top teams. They're the only top team, really, who play in that style. And so they're not one that you want to play when you're a top team.
Totally. And Atletico are playing the mental games as well already. They've clearly made it clear that it's a tie they relish. It's a tie in terms of taking on the current champions, and they're making themselves massive underdogs. And I have to be honest, I know Liverpool cock a hoop at the moment because they're literally on top of the world. But deep down, they'll be thinking, oh, bloody Atletico, late February or in February when it's just getting tough. They'll be hoping that the league is pretty much wrapped up. I doubt it will be by that stage. The games come thick and fast, and then you're going to have two games of endurance against Atletico. So I mean, Liverpool, clear favourites, as they should be. But I would imagine it'd be interesting. Liverpool, their supporters, if any listen to the podcast, whether you would have preferred a game against Real Madrid or Barcelona as opposed to playing Atletico Madrid. Because of the reputation. I know there's different players. My message to Liverpool supporters would be, but their mentality is exactly the same. So it's they're going to be, they're really intriguing ties. Whereas the other one, Man City, Real Madrid, is one you can really look forward to, and you know that both teams are going to be similar, open, attractive style of football. Both teams looking to win both legs. The Atletico Liverpool one is going to be a totally different affair. Because we know that, you know, Liverpool will go out and try to win both legs, but Klopp will know who he's playing against, the type of team they're playing against. So it might not be the usual all-action Liverpool that we see, throwing everything forward, because he knows that Atletico and Simeone will have a plan. The plan will be to hit them on the counter-attack, score from a set piece. They do have quality players, Atletico, that can cause Liverpool trouble, but Atletico and Simeone will have a plan.
Shall we talk about the best game of the weekend?
Yeah, if we're being genuine, or am I looking around for a 0-0, another 0-0? Invited it to Valencia.
I mean it. Yes.
And Osasuna, Real, the game of the season.
The quality of the goals and the quality of some of the performances and a coming together of two of the players of the season, of the half season, I suppose, in La Liga, in their different style. So Odegaard at one end with an absolutely magnificent goal, and Chimi Avila got two goals on the losing side, though, for Osasuna. With that, I mean, I've never seen a goal like it. I referred to it in the intro, where he basically he plays it to himself and heads it in.
Well, when he chases that, I mean, I think I might prefer the first one, but I know where you're coming from the second one. When he chases it, it's him against two defenders and he's third favourite. But somehow his aggression causes enough problems for them to allow the ball to bounce. And then it's a question of him just having the determination there. It's a little flick where he knocks it out. He shouldn't get there first, but he does. Then he holds them off, then flicks it over his head, then it bounces up. And you're thinking, right, what's he going to do now? He's going to wait for the ball to come down and take a touch. And he throws his head at it and gets an angled finish on it. It was a brilliant goal. I mean, in general terms, there was a brilliant game of football. I thought the first 15 minutes, Osasuna were a better team. And then 3 minutes later, they're 2-0 down. By the 28th minute, they're 3-0 down. Three wonderful top-draw goals from Real Sociedad. The build-up for Oyarzabal's first goal of the game, the late build-up, the last bit of the build-up for Paul Tu's goal, the pass and the movement off the ball, and then the finish from Paul Tu. Then Odegaard's won the strike from a set piece. It wasn't a normal wrap your foot around it into the top corner. It was almost like a half wrap, and sort of it was a different technique. He pinged it into the top corner as opposed to shaping it and curling it. Aridane gets the goal just on the stroke of half time. A glimmer of hope for Osasuna, but you're not holding out much hope. So Real Sociedad, they got their first three goals in the space of 13 minutes. Aridane on the 46th minute, and Chimi got his first in the 48th. So within this, I know either side of half time, Osasuna were back in it. Roncalio lets them down again, though. It was silly sending off. We see this from certain players, that serial offenders. So that put Osasuna back down to 10. Isak then stretches them away to take it 4-2 after coming as a sub. One of the super subs that happened this weekend. And you're thinking that, no, they can't. That's it, done and dusted. And then Chimi gets another one. So 4-3, 10 minutes Osasuna. Standing ovation from the supporters, despite losing at home. It was a brilliant game of football. Would you say game of the season so far?
But yeah, no, that's a good shout. Actually, I can't off the top of my head. I can't think of a better one. So yeah, so if anyone, so you can get in touch at @LaLiga_weekly or @TerryGibson88 at @Driscoll2020. Get in touch. Tell us if you can remember a better game this season. Last question on Osasuna, Terry, before we take a break. Chimi Ávila, how much money and what level of club would it take to get him away in January?
I think that I would imagine the buy clause is doable. I don't know what it is. I'll look into it and try and we'll do our best to try and find out what the buy clause is. But Osasuna, I suspect, would rather us not.
He's got fans among our listeners.
Yeah, his stock is going up and up. And, I mean, it was interesting at Huesca. This year, he's blowing the place up. He's literally on fire. I made a point, though. I'm really interested to... He's a street player that's never had his natural talent coached out of him. And that can happen with players like Chimi Ávila. And I sincerely hope if he does leave Osasuna, he goes to the right club and the right coach. I would hate to see him strangled by a technical coach who wants him to change his game, because we all love seeing Chimi play. As we say, he's a street footballer with an appetite for success wherever he's going to play. His level, I really still don't know. You could make a case for him being cover for Luis Suarez, backup at Barcelona. You could see a bit of Aguero in him. I think it's going to take clubs some serious thought to see at what level he can be a success at. Where will he be of use? I mean, he's been absolutely sensational last season and this season.
Right. We will come back after a quick break and I'll tell you what's got on my nerves this weekend in La Liga. So welcome back to El Tel and John's La Liga Weekly. It's the last podcast we'll do in this decade. In fact, but we will be back when La Liga resumes in early January. And when we come back, they will have sorted out the VAR and everything will work perfectly, if only. Mallorca beaten by Sevilla. Now, Terry, I'm not a Mallorca fan. And that, I think, shows that something is wrong. It's not a new thing. I haven't got a new take on the VAR. It's just, as I said at the beginning, it's decisions that are being made that no one thought of at the time. Now, so Sevilla leading, Mallorca thought they'd equalised through Budimir, and then it's one of those ridiculous offsides where I think it took 3.5 minutes to sort this one out, because they're looking as to whether there was a touch on the way through. So when do we take the offside? And then they've got the lines coming down. I think, so one, they need to change, football in general, not La Liga, need to change the offside law just to give strikers a little bit more leeway, because we're seeing things that look to the naked eye a perfectly good goal being ruled out. And then the second one, the Ever Banega penalty, was just ludicrous. It's just a tackle. It's just a tackle like tackles happen in football. The ball goes down the other end. They carry on playing. They wind it back. The VAR has a look. And they the two players, it's Babo, isn't it, who comes and makes some contact on Jordan, I think. And so it's just you can find penalties everywhere if you go looking for them. And if I was a Mallorca fan, I'd be absolutely livid, because it changed the game. Sevilla won that game. It looks, you look at that, you think, oh, Sevilla won 2-0 at Mallorca, that must have been really straightforward. But it wasn't. And the VAR changed the game on knife edge decisions, not a question of getting decisions that were wrong and turning them to being right. The example, the Spurs game today, the Gazzaniga foul on Alonso, referee got it wrong, VAR came in, got it right. So I'm not, you know, it gets it right sometimes, but that just irritated me. It's just a tackle. Let tackles happen. The end.
Yeah, even the Barcelona one. No one appealed. Yeah. Only Julián Alba appealed half-heartedly. And then you're seeing a player
and you don't
getting booked as well.
Yeah, yeah, and that which is madness, isn't it?
But, and he clearly didn't intend to handball. The ball's gone over his head. Suarez has headed it back. Suarez didn't appeal. It was Jordi Alba that appealed, who was nearest, and he put his hand up quickly. And then we are seeing stuff that no one else has seen, that, you know, suddenly people are looking at it and going, oh. And in saying that, in that game, Mallorca, where Diego, the first goal for Sevilla, Diego Carlos, I think, is it Idrissou Baba? He throws his arm into his face twice. I mean, he's not trying to elbow him in the face, but he's trying to shake off a defender that's trying to mark him. And I thought there was a clear contact, enough for Idrissou to go down. And the VAR looked at it and still allowed the goal. I thought it was going to be disallowed. So there's loads of issues regarding VAR that I had one in the Real Madrid game where Real Madrid earned a corner. Athletic Bilbao thought it was offside. I thought it was offside. They headed the ball away for the corner. And because it wasn't, the impact wasn't important, the assistant referee didn't put the flag up. And then Real Madrid are allowed to take a corner. If Real Madrid score from that corner, VAR can't go back and to decide whether it was a legitimate corner or not. So there's loads of things. And with the offside, until they've got the technology that is quick and proves it, I agree with you that there needs to be an adaptation to the laws of the game in terms of offside. But would we do it? Is it daylight? A certain amount? It's incredibly hard to decide how you sort out the mess that is those tight offsides and VAR.
I'll just draw the line at rather than it being at the very front point of the striker, you could just sort of draw it at sort of the back of the striker, as it were. So if any of him's onside, he's onside. I think that's, you know, you'd still argue about exactly where the line is. It would just tip the balance in the striker's direction rather than the defender's direction, which I think when we're drawing these lines, that, as you say, we're not entirely convinced that are accurate. I think it's just the way to do it. You just allow more goals, basically, instead of ruling out more goals. Because the idea of VAR, you weren't supposed to re-referee the game, and no one ever said, let's bring in VAR so we can disallow more goals. No one ever said that about a game of football.
No one would agree to it, would they?
No. If you'd said to people 3 or 4 years ago, this is what VAR will look like, people would have said, no. But we are where we are. Anyway, shall we crack on? All Celta Vigo fans might not want us to, because they'd won six, their last six visits to Levante, they'd won, which is some record, isn't it? But now they've taken, 5 points from 10 matches, despite leading until the hour. And for all the promise that Celta Vigo keep threatening to have, they keep finding ways of staying in the bottom three.
Yeah, even at one, when it was 1-0, when Aspas gets the early goal in the 12th minute, and they were playing well for the rest of the half, they started the second half, wasn't too bad either. The change of my role coming on completely changes the dynamic of that game whatsoever. But even at 1-0, you're looking at it and thinking Celtic are the more likely team to get the second goal. They're showing their quality. They're playing some really good stuff and they're carrying a threat. And at the same time, you're thinking, we just know what the Levante are like. This could easily be turned around. I underestimated how fragile the confidence is at Celta and belief. So when Roger gets the first goal after 6 minutes, 60 minutes, they Celta folded, completely folded. Every attack from then on, Levante looked like adding to the scoreline. Eventually, it ended up 3-1. So it's a huge problem. We're talking about, you know, teams that are getting better at the bottom. And Celta, despite having such a talented squad, results are just not improving for them at the moment.
By contrast to Leganés, who are looking really good, aren't they, since Javier Aguirre came in. A huge game, 2-0 against Espanyol. Braithwaite and En-Nesyri with good goals. And Wolves fans asking about Espanyol. And the good news for Wolves fans is Espanyol are awful, aren't they?
In La Liga, it might do Machin a favour if he started picking the players that play in the Copa del Rey in the Europa League. That'll teach bloody Roulet to get a couple of goals midweek in the Copa del Rey, but then be sat on the bench until it was a lost cause today. I despair at some manager's stubbornness. Every time I see Espanyol play, I see Granero labouring around midfield and then getting taken off. And I'm thinking, why not make changes? Why is Roulet not starting up front? He is an obvious threat for Espanyol, but no, we'll keep him for the Copa del Rey in the Europa League. It's one win in 10, as opposed to one win in 8 for Gallego, who got the sack and was doing better in terms of the Europa League results because he got them through the qualifiers and they started the group off well. So I despair. I thought it was good. So I thought it was a good appointment. I underestimated how stubborn Machin is. In terms of his formation, in terms of his team selection. And I've no idea how Espanyol are going to get themselves out of trouble. Quite frankly, I don't think they will now.
No, and his reputation is plumbing new depths, I'm afraid, isn't it, Pablo Machin? Let's crack on, because we're up against the time here. So a couple more games to look at. Villarreal beat Getafe by 1-0. And a man we've talked about a lot in the last few weeks, and Anguissa played a part in the only goal scored by Moy Gomez.
Oh, he did. I mean, we talk about assists. I had this discussion when I was here. Suarez played well, Luis Suarez, and he gets an assist for Messi's goal. So when he flicks it around the corner to Messi, Messi didn't go have 4 or 5 touches, hold off 5 defenders and stick it in the top corner. And Anguissa's run from the halfway line where he's... there's 3 players chasing the ball, and they're all strong players. He's holding them off. He shows good skill. He gets a shot, which is parried by the goalkeeper, falls to Moy Gomez for pretty much a tap-in. And Anguissa, that doesn't count as an assist. So he's run 60 yards because the goalkeeper had the save, and it goes down as a rebound. And that typifies my complaints about the legitimacy of the assist. How they judged assists. So Villarreal, excellent win. Decent run of form again. And, you know, backing up the win at Sevilla, drawing against Atletico, then beating Getafe at home. They've turned it around. And Anguissa clearly is a big part of that. Him and Ibora gives them a muscular presence in midfield. Chigueras has come back into the team on really good form. Need to find 1 or 2 more goals. Moreno needs to be scoring again, but certainly Villarreal moving back in the right direction. And it kind of was a battle at times. I mean, Getafe let themselves down. Matias Oliveira on the pitch for 15 minutes before picking up 2 yellow cards. Didn't help his team's cause. But actually, Getafe, after, you know, recent run of good form, outstanding results, were pretty well beaten in that game.
So it looks like this Barcelona have got 39 points from 18 games. Real Madrid, 37. Sevilla, 34. Atletico, 32. So they're the Champions League places. Real Sociedad, 5th with 31. Getafe have got 30 points. Athletic, 28. And Valencia, 28. After another draw, another one they grabbed late in the day, away to Valladolid. 1-1, that one finished.
70 minutes of nothing. It was the in Spain this weekend, there's been really bad wind, really bad weather. I quickly added wind and weather in case anyone got the wrong idea. Even in Barcelona, the wind has been diabolical. I went home from the studios last night, been in here all day, and literally had to battle to get me way 300 yards back to where I stay in the hotel. It was treacherous. So that game invited it. It's one of the, everybody knows it's the worst stadium in La Liga in terms of the climate for some reason. And the wind was diabolical for 70 minutes. Terrible game. Nothing happened. And then they suddenly both came to realisation if they get the ball forward quicker, instead of trying to be, you know, play their normal type of game, it might help. Time running out. Both teams showed a bit more urgency. Sergi Guardiola came on. It'd been an interesting week in terms of the super subs. And he scored. And I think Valencia just about deserved a point. And they start to throw everything at it. And Ferran Torres gets an equaliser with the very last quick kick, which is kind of karma after they conceded last week against Real Madrid with the last kick of the game. So honours were even in that. It was terrible playing conditions. And in fairness, both teams put on a decent show. The supporters were easily man of the match, though. Turning out in that, in those conditions, they deserve the medal.
And, come all ye faithful, all 5,300 turned up at Eibar versus Granada. Fifth consecutive away defeat for Granada and a much-needed home win for Eibar.
Yep, the first goal was the important one. Granada missed two sitters at 0-0, and Sergi Enrique gets the opening goal of the game in the 21st minute, and it was the Eibar of old. It clearly showed that, you know, how much confidence plays in its part in any sport. But in football, Sergi Enrique gets their first goal, and it was a classic Eibar goal. And then from then on, it was a classic Eibar performance. Everyone played well. The style was there to see. The change of direction, left to right, right to left, in terms of the point of the attack, getting crosses in the box, two centre-forwards playing together, both attacking crosses, and they won it comfortably in the end. But can you imagine if it had gone 1-0 the other way? I think it was Carlos Fernandez missed the sitter. There was another opportunity as well where they went close. So if Granada scored a first goal in that game, then those 5,000-odd supporters of Eibar might have got a little bit anxious, and it might not have been the perfect way for Eibar to finish off for them, which has been a sensational decade of football at Eibar.
Yes, yeah, what a story that has been, actually. It's a good point, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
When we talk about the teams of the decade, obviously Barcelona and Real Madrid, but yeah, Eibar, from where they came to where they are. It's almost because in the second half of the decade, we've got used to them being where they are. In the last few years, we've started to view them as a mid-table La Liga club, and you're right, it's a good point. We should remember what an achievement it is constantly for Eibar to be where they are and looking like they belong in La Liga. Right, we'd better wrap it up there, Terry. I hope your wind issue clears up before Christmas and those the Brussels sprouts that will be inevitably coming your way. Right, well, safe journey home. I hope there are no travel disruptions so you get back to Blighty for the Christmas celebrations. And it's a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to everybody who's listening. Thank you for your support. Tell your friends and make sure that you rejoin us again when La Liga kicks off again early January. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. Thank you for listening.